Welcome to the OFX podcast. I'm Dave Claxton, and along with me is the teeny trotter of Tremblant, Bethany McChesney. And this episode is brought to you by Duonamic. And by the time this episode comes out, there will be a post up about a Duonamic giveaway for a Alivia. And I tried to say it right. Alvia. Giving it my all here. Anyway, for one of those to be drawn for in June. And the post will have how to enter, but you know, it's pretty much the same as all things, you know, like, share, that kind of crap. Anyway, Beth, welcome back from Quebec.
Thank you.
So first off, what was the deal with the owl?
Oh, I don't really know. They said it was the symbol of the location or something. Like it was a mascot of some sort. I don't know. But yeah, the owl, they brought it into the start line, and then everyone that placed first got to hold the owl and bring it up on the podium. So people, I don't know, it's kind of cool, something different.
I couldn't help but think it would have been more appropriate at owl's head.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. But yeah, they said it was either the animal of the location or a mascot or something to do with being related to where we were.
Okay, well, that's cool. I mean, yeah, I like owls. I'm an owl guy. I'm a bit like owls. They're very cool. So I was just like, I had no idea why, but there it was. And yeah. In fairness, at the last RX1, I got to bring my dog on the podium. So that was just as good.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. He did really well when we brought him there. He did really good. It was great.
Oh, well, people bring their kids up on podiums.
Yeah, but kids suck. I mean, like, have you ever brought your kid on the podium either?
Well, I have not brought Emerson on the podium, but she has brought herself on the podium with me a few times.
She's just decided to go podium.
Yeah, she loved it.
Surprised.
Yeah.
So how was your race? Because this is like a train through race, right?
Yeah. And it was a race to really just test where my calves and Achilles are, because Toronto still 3 weeks ago wasn't really great. And with that aspect, and I've only run twice since Toronto. So when they posted the elevation at this race, I was like, just don't even think about racing it. Just get through it and make sure the body holds up in one piece, because Endeca is coming up and that's a little bit more of my focus. So I wanted to be able to come out of this race still feeling good and able to get right into DECA training. It was the most technical, grueling course I have ever done.
And you did Owl's
Head. And I did Owl's Head. Yeah. And there was different times when I was running with different people and everyone was like, oh my gosh, it reminds me of Owl's Head. But it was just, it was longer. And I think the vertical might have been a bit more, but the technical. And I think what also made it a little bit worse was that it was just above freezing and it was raining.
Oh, that was the worst.
Yeah. And at the top of the mountain, the wind is just blowing sideways. So even the obstacles were that much more difficult. And the dunk wall almost brought some PTSD, but it wasn't quite as cold as Tahoe. No. But I was still fighting off my hands freezing and stuff like that. That's also what I think added to the gruelingness of it. And it was so slippery. I've never fallen so much in a race too. Just on the downhills, there's like all the hidden rocks in the long grass. You just like slip. Like, oh, I fell so many times. And then the long slugs up, just bushwhacking.
I've heard a lot of bushwhacking.
I was rarely running. I maybe was running. And I mean, I'm also not really good at running on technical terrain. I don't have anywhere to do that around here. But it was very rarely a runnable course for someone that's not really good on super technical terrain. And even the downhills, it was just so rocky. So you're still kind of like balancing on rocks and like trying not to trip. And yeah, some of the downhills were super treacherous. There was about 5 river crossings, or creeks, I guess I should say. And actually there was a little creek ditch like 20 meters from the start line. So you were never you never had a dry moment.
It looked pretty good. Like, it looked very scenic and very beautiful. Sadly, like, the weather. Now, normally for me, when I race, that kind of weather is an advantage. That's a good thing for me because make the obstacles harder for people.
Yeah.
But I still hate it. I don't like racing. I would rather race. I'd rather have less of an advantage and race on a nice day.
Yeah, the obstacles were a bit of a mess too for me.
Oh, you tell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just, my hands were cold. It was wet. And I think too, because I was, there was half of the obstacles were in the last 2 kilometers. So there was so much just running and bushwhacking through the middle of the course. You would go sometimes 2 kilometers without, and then there'd be a wall. And then you go another kilometer and then Tyrolean or so it was so congested, all of the obstacles at the end and at the beginning, and then the middle was just a lot of, so by the time you get to the end and then you're getting on rigs and they're already wet, I was just so fatigued. And the race ended up taking me just over 4 hours, which is, and it was 23K, not really a big deal, except when that's the longest run I've done in 3 years. It was a big deal for me and more elevation than I have ever done for sure. So, but I also use it as an opportunity to try a bit of a different fueling plan because I have really bad issues with, getting like cramping. And in Toronto, my calves cramped so bad, I could barely even run. So we had a bit of, we tried some different things and it worked. So, that's another positive to take away. So I was able to finish without any significant cramping, and my Achilles held up and my calves held up. So to me, that's all that I really cared about. But yeah, I was happy when it was over. And I might have shed a little tear and then ran into the car so I didn't go hypothermic.
You had a lot more tears.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good you got back out there. And the thing is, and Lindsay and Ryan showed up to dominate, which was sweet of them. I kind of almost feel bad when, like, you know, some of the people were like, you know, oh, okay, you know, we're gonna have a good race, maybe get a podium, then Lindsay and Ryan show up and it's crap.
I know. I was hanging out with Margaret Jessen before, who's an amazing mountain runner, and we were like asking who's there, and then we both see Lindsay run by and she looked at me and she's like, so we're all running for second. But Ryan's race actually was fairly close with Ryan and Jesse. So Jesse was only, for most of the race, he was only 2 or 3 minutes behind him. So Ryan still had to put in a pretty good effort to beat Jesse that day.
Yeah, Jesse can never be underestimated. He's always got something, even when his focus seems a little off, like on the triathlon stuff and stuff. He just has that fitness and he has that extra gear and he has that kind of, you know, that grit, you know, that no quit factor. So
yeah,
it is nice that they had a good race. And Sam Muley Bear put in a good weekend too. I think he got third.
He was third.
And then I think he won the sprint on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So this is an interesting one too, because this was the second day and the sprint was part of the age group series.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian series. So it was interesting on the second day to see the people that were running age group who do run elite sometimes also. And this is kind of what we talked about with what's going to happen then to the elite fields when there's such a focus on age group racing this season. And the elite field, even on Saturday, was very sparse on the women's side. And they actually started the men and women together, which was nice. But yeah, the elite fields
were anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Already cut you off there.
Oh, yeah, your video's a little froze.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, it looks fine.
Oh, that was fine. Okay. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, there was very, very few women, but there's less incentive to race elite now with the age group being the focus.
And did they say this should still be a payout race? Like, I know it's not much, but there's still something, I think.
I have no idea.
I think that's what they said in the beginning of the year, that all the Canadian races would be a payout races. It just wasn't going to be huge. Like, it's probably one of those five, three, one kind of deal.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen anything from Toronto.
Yeah. Well, what was that? That was like, what, a month ago?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be a jerk, but this is Spartan. Like, you know.
Well, I'm not also not holding my breath or like. No.
Like, right. You're still in the same calendar year here. We got lots of time to kill. I know. Don't be spending that one yet.
No. Yeah, they don't mention anything about prize money.
So, but the legs are feeling good. The Achilles is good. That's awesome. And then what's it called? And we said Margaret was great. Margaret ended up taking second in the Beast.
Nice. Yeah, and she wasn't too far behind Lindsay. She actually pushed her a fair bit on some of the climbs near the beginning. I know they ran together for a portion of the first half. And yeah, she had a great race. She's so good on mountains. And again, she's from the Calgary area, so she has opportunity to train in the mountains. And I think that's one of the biggest issues that when you don't live near, like to run these technical mountain races well, when you live somewhere like where I do, where it's a 3-hour drive to even get any sort of elevation. It's so hard to train for. But I love doing the races, but it's such a divide when I'm running beside someone who every day after work, they go and run the mountain.
Rich Ryan has always gone about that too, right? Like, cause he was living out in Philadelphia in like city, right? And so he, you know, Rich, super fast runner, amazing runner, but would get, you know, kind of get it handed to him a bit on the mountain stuff. And he's just like, you know, why would I race these mountain races? I don't have any shot like that. I can't train that way. So that's why he ended up switching over to predominantly the hybrid thing. But and now he moved to Colorado, but he's apparently still not running the mountains anyway. I get it. Like, that's, if you don't have the proper tools, it's hard to train, especially for that. Like, I know Mick has always been an amazing guy, because he lives in Winnipeg and there's not a lot of hills there, but he's very creative in the way he trains and figures out a way to do it. But I mean, it's putting in a lot of extra effort.
Like, yeah, and he does put in the time to travel to Alberta any chance he gets, and being a teacher, I know he takes a sick blocks of time in the summers too. So he's getting out into trails probably a little bit more than some people.
And he's a single dude with no kids, which helps. Yep, that helps clear up some time. Tough to train. A couple of things. So I'm still getting ready for Indian Mud Run for this coming weekend. Very excited to finally get down there. My knee is much progressing, getting a lot better. I may actually be able to run the race rather than just walk it and do the obstacles. It's a little disappointing because I was thinking, like, this is an Indian Mud Run 3K. I'm thinking tough obstacles, 3K. I'd have a shot to really do well, at least for, right? And who knows? But now I'm kind of like, you know, just plod along, do what you can. But now that's feeling a little bit better. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to make this decision at the start line and maybe like 50 meters after the start line. See how I hold up on that a little bit. But the one thing that's come up though is we're doing some volunteering. And this is something that clicked into me because it can, you know, obviously Spartans and leather races have a tough time getting volunteers right now. And I've said it before, the shifts are too long. Like Spartan, you volunteer for Spartans like 5:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. So when the heck do you race? Right. And then if you're racing the next day, well, that means you're staying an extra day. So you've lost the financial gain of getting a free race. So anyway, Indian Mud Run. So my volunteer shift is from 7:30 to 11.
Okay. Not bad.
That's reasonable, right? So anyway, and you don't get a full free race for it, but at least, you know, that gives me time to volunteer and then do my race. You do get discounted. So anyway, it's just, I'm just thinking more companies need to figure that out, like make some variable hours and variable rewards for that so that people can have time to do it.
So I know they were really short on volunteers this weekend too, and one of the ways that they compensated was there was no burpee penalties except spear in the festival area.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was all penalty loops,
which is kind of cool.
Yeah, especially if you're a runner.
And if they're done right.
Yeah, and they were reasonable run loops.
Did you see a lot of these penalty loops, Bethany?
I saw more of them than I missed.
I mean, just how many?
Four.
Four.
I know.
I'm lucky there's no burpees.
And spear. So I did do burpees. But yeah, it's just the wetness of everything. Yeah, and they were on the three on the top.
Top of the hill. So, it makes sense. They're rough.
Yeah. So I'm a fair judge of these penalty loops because I saw a bunch. And they were reasonable. Like I would say they were all about the 2 minute mark.
Yeah, that seems right. They were talking about a lot about the one down in Mexico for that 10-foot wall. And it was like apparently taking people three plus minutes to do it.
Oh wow.
And you know, these are good racers taking 3+ minutes, and they're like, wow, that's even I'm gonna say that's a bit much, especially for a wall.
Yeah.
Although a 10-foot wall, I don't know how I feel about that thing.
Oh well, I don't like it. Again, I struggle with obstacles where it's like you have such an advantage if you're just tall. Period.
And that is one of them. Like I've heard people before say like, oh, I can't do the Spartan monkey bars because they're too far apart. Well, honestly, and I'm just going to say, I'm not a tall guy. You're not a tall person. Mm-hmm. You can swing through that easy. It's doable. Your height won't stop you there.
Yeah.
But a 10-foot wall is a 10-foot wall. And unless you have incredible leaping ability,
yeah,
or are very tall. And I mean, we saw this, like Mark Batras, you know, you're not going to say he's not an athletic guy and he failed it like times. You know, like there's a lot of good guys who couldn't get up that 10-foot wall. And I think Chris Rogowski was the only woman who got up it.
Really? And she's not sure. I don't know how tall she is. No.
And she's got long arms and stuff. And they had, and the women did have a kickboard, right? So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm just saying I don't really like it. It's kind of like a giant warped wall. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I personally don't like the high walls because it's such a discipline. And even if I can get it, it's like fingertips and then I'm doing like a finger pull up. So even just the effort, if I can, it's kind of like Stairway to Sparta, mm-hmm. where I can just barely get my fingers on the first hold. And whereas people who are tall, just boop, 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 no big deal. So I just, but again, I'm only complaining because I'm about as short as they come. And I know they base the obstacles on a person who's 5 feet tall being able to still get them. And so like I could reach it, but even just the effort to be able to still do it at the point that my fingertips touch something. And I have decent vertical, because I do train that, but it's just sometimes frustrating. And then add in things being wet. So it's...
I kind of think like, so for stuff like a big wall or a big warp wall, right? Which kind of is, you know, oftentimes a short people being, put a rope down it. And the reason mm-hmm. being, people are going to say, well, that's stupid because then, you know, anybody can get over it. Yeah. But if you're good, you can just take that step. You can take the big leap and you can get up and get over. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't stop everybody in their tracks. Because let's just say, for example, there's an 8-foot wall. Can you, like, you know, and I'll just use me. I can do an 8-foot wall, but I know a lot of people can't. And if mm-hmm. I do it, I just run up, kick it, and jump and go over. But if you have to use a rope, it's going to take you more time. It's going to be more like that. Same with a big warp wall. If it's a great big warp wall with a rope, and like for me, I'll use myself the other side. I'm crap at warp walls. You know, it's going to take me longer with a rope than somebody who is really good and has the agility for warp walls and can get right up it. So I don't think there's any downside to it. So maybe someone will eventually do that. Like you see it now and again, but. Mm-hmm. I think Savage does it with theirs. They have the ropes go down. I just think it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It still doesn't make it easy if there's a 2-foot rope. It's still difficult.
And it takes longer, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
I think it'll go well. Other than that, Indian Mud Run coming up. Like I said, very excited about that. I definitely has been a bucket list. I really look forward to it. It's going to be wild. Seeing some good clips out there now, like one of the obstacles appears to be like a cargo net you crawl under and then mm-hmm. you crawl under the cargo net. So like hanging from the cargo net and then you get to essentially a Valkyrie of rings going up and rings going down and then down the other side underneath a cargo net. I'm like,
oh, nice.
So I'm like, yeah, these look like good fun obstacles.
Yeah.
Look like something that will be interesting. I'm really going to bring my Arsenal gloves just in case, because it's supposed to be really hot.
Oh,
I see that People think hot. Yes, hot. You got to bring gloves.
Yes, because why, Dave?
Because hot bars melt skin. They peel calluses off like orange peels and banana peels. You left them a bloody mess. It will not be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But so today's like a really Team OFX centric episode because you went and did your race. And then we also have to say congrats to Aaron Newell for coming third in Savage, Ohio, and finishing third in the point series in Team OFX. And we are going to get to our guest, who is another Team OFXer, and that's Heather White, who's coming off a win at Barbarian Race, but she also had a really good showing at Worlds for High Rocks. I want to talk to her about that too, because she ended up, I believe it was second in the non-elite, so the Pro Wave, the same one that, you know, that Megita ended up winning. So a bit of a complicated way to explain it, but I'm sure she'll do it. Anyway, let's check in on Heather White. Hey, Heather.
Hello. How are y'all?
Good. How are you doing? This is probably the first time you've ever actually heard Heather speak.
Yeah. Hey, Bethany.
Hi.
I'm glad our last recording that I did with Dave didn't work so that you could join us for this one.
Yeah.
We were just saying,
I don't think I've ever seen you without a beard. What is going on?
I had to do it for work. Hey, get this though. So I was out with my daughter and she's, like I said, she's moving in. She's got her little business, lash business. And she wanted to pick up this kind of piece of furniture for her, I don't know what you'd call it, her room for.
Okay.
Studio. There you go.
Yeah.
Studio. So we go in there and we're looking at everything and it's getting stuff. And then I go back out into the van and wait because we'd already had other stuff in the van, so we didn't have room for it. And Taylor comes back into to the van and then the lady comes over. She's like, oh my God, I thought you were her boyfriend. I'm like,
you do. You look younger.
Too shabby.
Looking so nice.
Yeah. That's, at least it, you know, with all the gray gone, it makes a big difference.
So do you have to leave it? You have to stay clean shaven?
Yeah, for this job, yeah. Because a lot of times we have to wear like gas mask kind of stuff. So
did you get a new job?
It's just kind of a different area, right? So same kind of deal. Just we go to different job sites. So this particular job site, sometimes we have to go in some not nice spaces and you need to wear be prepared with the mask at all times. So that's what it is.
Gotcha.
But aside from that, we were just talking about this and I know you and I chatted before kind of about Beth was saying how it's so hard to match up against these people with technical running and where Spartan has gone with a lot of their technical courses when that kind of training isn't available to you nearby, when you got to like drive 3 hours to get to a real trail. And I said, I thought, you know, this is, you and I talked before about how it's kind of like drifted away from what you can get ready for.
Mm-hmm. It has. Do you mean just like the technical?
Yeah. Like the bushwhacking and stuff.
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to have access to a lot of trails where I am. So I can't get enough of it, but it's definitely hard for those who don't live near the trails to for that kind of terrain.
Yeah. And it's even not even trails. I can get to trails, but like the long, grueling bushwhacking climbs. Where if you live near actual mountains and then the downhill super technical stuff where you're kind of still bushwhacking but you're running downhill on it, there's no way I could find somewhere to train for that within a 3 hour drive.
We definitely have hills and trails here, but I think the longest like hill would be like maybe under a mile with just a steady climb. And when I went out and did the Spartan Ultra in Colorado, that was completely different. I was not ready for that. I thought I had done enough hill training, but climbing those ski resort hills, you're climbing for like 30 minutes. Well,
yeah.
So it is hard to prepare for that. But I think just an overall fitness will help you get through that.
You know what? I think it's cool. You can simulate the uphill. you know, you can work that. But the downhill, there's no way to really simulate that. You just need to practice, and it's so hard on you to practice too, right? Because downhill is so bloody hard on the body. But you have to be essentially fearless and at the same time develop that skill. And you can't do that in a gym. You can't do that with stepping up boxes or stair climbers or incline treadmills or anything like that. The only way to get that skill is to go out there and do it.
Right.
That, I think, is probably the biggest advantage people like that have.
And people don't really know that you need to train downhills. So you have a race that has a lot of downhills and your quads are just completely blown. But downhills are definitely important to train also. As, you know, people mainly just think about training the uphills. When I went out and did the Spartan Ultra in Colorado, I ended up having to walk the downhills backwards because my quads were just, it was hurting my knees so bad. My quads were just not ready for that kind of intensity of downhill, steep downhills. And it was just hurting every step. I had to actually walk the hills backwards.
I've had to go up them backwards, never down them. I think it was Blue Mountain, the first
OCR. Every step.
Yeah, the first OCRWC where I was completely unprepared. A couple of times I had to walk up backwards and just stretch everything out because I was dying. But down, I probably just took it easy going down at that time because I wasn't in good enough shape to let it fly and descend it. But
yeah,
I find now actually I do better on the downhills, even though I don't practice a lot, just because I just say, screw it, I'm going. That's it. And just let the feet try to keep up to gravity.
An experience. And
pray you don't sprain an ankle.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we're hoping for. But, you know, it only hurt till the pain goes away, right?
Right. But if you do it enough, your ankles get used to it. Mine are used to it now.
But you did just win an OCR and a technical race.
I did.
So a lot of us, including Bethany, do not know anything about Barbarian Challenge. I personally, because of Riley, have heard nothing but Barbarian Challenge for years because apparently it's just the greatest ever. So kind of tell Bethany what it's like to do Barbarian.
Yeah, so Barbarian is a local event here in Alabama. It's about 6.5 miles of trail running with 35 obstacles they had this year. There's creek crossings in it, about 3 creek crossings, 1 swim. It's very short, maybe 100 meters. And they have a rope that you can just pull across. You don't have to actually swim it. And it's very technical. Parts of it is down in a gorge that goes under a waterfall where you do the swim. So the scenery is just awesome. I love it because it's a local race. So everybody that I train with and see at races are all there. So it's just one big like gathering of all the local OCR people. Their obstacles can be difficult. They've added Skitch, which is at the OCR World Championship, which has always been a difficult one for me, but I did get it this year with gloves. I know Dave will like that. He's
trying to help.
But yeah, it's a brutal race. 6.5 miles, about 4 or 5 pretty big climbs, steep climbs.
So, don't they have a name for like 3 of them? What is it?
There's Nebo is the first one, called Nebo because they say you have to get on your knees and elbows to get up it. There is Stairway to Heaven, which is about 1/4 mile climb, just steady incline. There's one called Jeep Hill, and then one that they just call Kudzu Hill. They're all named, but you know that if a hill has a name, it's going to be pretty bad.
So you went through it this year, and like I said, you got the overall win. What's the penalty system for those guys? Because I'm not even sure what system they're using now.
Yeah, they are obstacle mandatory with a band, but you can do a penalty loop if you can't do the obstacle. So you have a band. If you choose not to do the penalty loop, then I guess you lose your band, but I don't know who isn't just going to go run an extra quarter mile. So they do like for obstacle completion, but the penalties are a penalty loop if you can't do the obstacle. I know for the rope climb, they did have a 20 burpee penalty.
That's pretty good for a rope climb.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it was about a 20, I think they said 22 foot rope climb. It was pretty high, higher than the standard. I think it's normally like 15 feet.
Yeah.
So it was, even I was like getting to the top and I was like, wow, this is really high. So penalty loops. So most everybody can keep their band if you just do the penalty loop.
So this is the system that I've been saying actually Spartan should use. Multi attempt for everything with a
partner bio,
right? Mm-hmm. Just it works for everybody, it works for everything. As long as the penalties are set up well, then you're not too bad. Mm-hmm. But just the one and done is no good. It doesn't make for great
risk. Yeah.
No, I think they definitely should do multiple attempts. I know that their argument is with the volunteers and trying to keep up with who's done what. But I think Savage does multiple attempts.
Yeah.
I think they haven't had any issues with that. So
I think their argument is they just have been doing the burpees for so long and that's their thing and they want that to be their thing. And so they keep it there. But Yeah.
Which they're kind of getting away from. They've added a bunch of penalty loops, probably because of controversy with burpees also. Mm-hmm. I know I've been penalized 10 minutes in a race and lost a podium spot because they said that I did not get my hands above my head when I came up on my burpees. So
tell them you had tall hair that day.
I know.
Well, Beth was just
but I have watched some of these elite races and seen some of these burpees and they have not been penalized.
Oh yeah, it's not consistent.
No.
And that's the problem, right? Some people are going to get judged strict by the letter and other people aren't even going to get looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, but what you were saying about the penalty loops, Beth was just, she just did a race in Montreal and you were saying only one burpee penalty obstacle.
Yeah, just the
spear. Oh, really?
Yeah, everything else was a run loop.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Now just make the multiple attempt instead of just a one and done, and you're good to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe get rid of the spear, but
I know
that's another conversation.
I'm back and forward on that. I can't decide. You know, I'm really like. If the spear was a multiple attempt thing, people might not have a lot of time with it, right? They might be, I'm okay. So if it's a multiple attempt with a buyout, if you can't do it, then you're all right. But the one and done, so much stuff. And like what happened to Mexico, we can see how many things go wrong.
Yeah, right.
But even with that one, you wouldn't even need a penalty because the amount of time it takes you to rope that spear back in and throw it again is enough penalty in its own
right. And I would be the stupid one to sit there and say, oh no, I'm going to get it this time and just keep trying. And 10 minutes.
Watching girls run by.
Yeah. When I could have just done a penalty loop or burpees in 2 or 3 minutes.
The only issue I see with the spear though, with it taking so much time is there being a backlog. And then if people, so as long as you have room for someone coming for their first attempt.
So, and they talked about this on Race Brain, and so, I mean, I would say that you have two lanes marked for retries, and they do this with OCRWC and other mandatory races. Sometimes they have a retry lane. Right. So if you miss your first one, you go to the retry lane, and then you just circle through the line if you need to. But when we're talking to people like the elite wave, which is really where it probably matters more, there's not enough of them for a backlog. Right.
So
you're probably going to be okay. And I think you get back, but yeah, a couple of retry lanes, especially for age group. And then fine. And if there's a long line at the retry lane, well, you shouldn't have missed it the first time.
Right. Or just go run your penalty loop.
Exactly. If it's too long, yeah. go run your penalty loop and head out. So I think it would work fine. The other thing, there's a couple other stuff. So, oh yeah, Barbarian, by the way, do they not give away the best podium prize stuff?
They do. They changed the prizes this year, which I was kind of glad because in the years past, they've just been huge awards that I just don't have room for in my house. But I like the new ones. I've got a whole Barbarian suit now. I've got the sword, the axe, the shield, and the helmet, and a couple of each. So
you got to put it all on and do a picture, right? So that we can put the picture with the yeah. that. I don't know. We need that.
Yeah.
That and I might come raid your closet one day for Halloween.
There you go. It's pretty heavy though.
Yeah, well, I've been working out.
And I'm sure the helmet will fit on that slick head.
That's right. That's right. I might have to wear something underneath to cushion it. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about too, because we really didn't get a chance to, was High Rocks in Vegas in Worlds. And yeah, you can tell me you're smiling because you were like, I want you to talk about how you were feeling going in, because this was a bit of a roller coaster for you.
It was. I actually debated going to the World Championship in Vegas, just because I have done 6 races. So my first one being January of last year in Dallas. It seems like I've been doing it for much longer than a year, but so I did 6 races last year, including the North American Championship in Chicago both years. Last June and then again in January. Is that one? And through 6 races, I was not able to improve my time barely any. I fluctuated. I would have 1 minute better, but then the next race I'd be 2 minutes slower, which they vary by location, the different rock zone setups, whether it's 2 laps or 3 laps. But I was just frustrated with all the hard training and hard work that I had put in that my time was not improving. So I just really was on the fence about spending the money and time to go out to Vegas just to, I guess, be disappointed again. I didn't want that to ruin my trip out to Vegas. So I decided that I would just go and just have fun, whether my time was 5 minutes slower than my previous best. I would just have fun in Vegas and being at the race and just enjoy the experience rather than putting so much pressure on myself. So that was going into it. So I went to it and just went out there and tried to do my best. And I came out with a 5-minute PR. So it was definitely a successful race.
But, you know, we talk about a lot of times like athletes and stuff and people struggling with confidence levels and things like that. And you don't, for people who might be open waves or age groupers or whatever, and people just, you don't assume someone at the high end of an athletic event struggles with confidence, struggles with right. that. But I mean Beth, I mean you probably know more about that with the collegiate sports and everything, but and again you talk about that mindset, how good and how bad that can affect your performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really everything. Like your fitness is, your fitness is probably wasn't even that different compared to when you ran 5 minutes slower, but just taking that pressure off of yourself and being able to just like enjoy the experience. And they say too, like our bodies respond better when we're enjoying things. And so without right. that negative coming into it and like the overanalyzing and stressing about where time needs to come from, your body was just in a better state of flow, so it responded with 5 minutes faster. So it's everything with when it comes to performance, I think, and it's probably not talked about or stressed enough.
Definitely, I think that taking that pressure off of myself definitely helped I just felt better during the race. I didn't feel pressured to certain time. So everything just finally came together for me.
Where do you think
and it like helped that the sled was lighter, but
you didn't make up 5 minutes on the sled.
Yeah.
Right. Like that was not a spot, but I thought what I was thinking, can you pinpoint, like, have you gone through your splits and stuff and can you see where you kind of improved, where that you got that 5 minutes from, or was it?
Oh yeah. Have I gone through my splits? I'm very analytical. Analyzed them. That's why I asked. Like, yes. My run times were pretty much about the same as where they have been. I improved all in the stations. My sled push was about a minute faster. Sled pull was a minute faster. My row was my fastest row. Lunges and wall balls were both a minute faster each than my for those stations.
How much lighter was the sled?
It was pretty light. Well, to be exact, 55 pounds. They took a plate off.
So yeah, like here's the thing. I'm hoping to talk to Mintra soon. And
the sled itself was not any heavier. So taking a weight off equalize it.
But that's their story, is that the sled was heavier. There was new poles that made it heavier. I find it a little iffy. And then my other question and will be, those sleds I believe were previously used in LA, to my understanding. Could be wrong on that, so that might be, but to my understanding, so if they were, does that mean the sleds in LA were 55 pounds heavy?
There you go.
So if they were used before, one or the other, either they were light in Vegas or they were heavy in LA, or they were brand new sleds in Vegas and different weights of whatever. But I'm just saying, those are some questions that eventually I would like
answer. Yeah, I'm not sure we'll ever get an answer.
No, but I can still ask.
My only question now is, are we going to stick with those weights?
Mm-hmm.
I hope they put in the heavy ones. I think the heavy sled is great for them. It just needs to be consistent. And if it's not consistent, that's fine too. Just acknowledge it.
Right.
You know, just like you can run a marathon, that's a hillier marathon or whatever the case may be. Different courses are different, and that's fine. Just acknowledge it and don't try to sell this, you know,
right, bill
of goods that everyone's the same. And that goes back to like, and so what do you think about qualifying? How should they do qualifying?
I definitely don't like how they did it this past year, just because of the difference internationally. I like the idea of maybe like six Americans and six Europeans. The top six from each are doing regions, regional championship, and then the top three from regions. But I don't like just the overall time, because also each venue varies based on the rock zone and the setup of it.
Yeah. I like the idea of actually three kind of regional semifinals, like you said. Mm-hmm. North American, a European, and a UK, because the UK has just bought in huge. So they're getting tons of people there. So then take five from each. So the top five from each of those. And then I don't know if they could expand it to more people, say 18 or whatever. So you take the top five from each, that's your 15, and then have three kind of last chance qualifier races where, you know, top person that wins those gets in, and obviously a bump down system too. Right. So, I mean, like, if you've already qualified, you can't qualify again or whatever the case would be. That's what I would like to see from it. I think it's fairly simple and yet a lot more fair.
Right, and not having a qualifying race 2 weeks before the world championship.
Yeah, like you would think a couple months, like the field should be set before a couple months maybe, or at least.
Yeah, just because people are making plans and, you know, they were holding out to see whether they would be in the top 15.
And that's why I say, if you had those last chance qualifiers, right? Say like three more races out of last chance qualifiers. Then the 15 people that are already in, they know they're safe and they can make their plans and they're already in. And then if you're trying for one of those, well, then you know, I may get it, I may not. You're aware, right? It's not like you you have a position, but you could lose it if somebody else does something out of your control. So I'm like,
I think that would be a good idea.
I know, or I'm pitching it every time.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to listen to us. So
they rarely do.
But it's still fun to discuss and just throw out ideas.
So is High Rocks going to be a big focus this year, or are you going to pivot and go elsewhere?
I am pivoting. not to say that I won't come back to it, but that training really mentally and physically wore me down. It's just very hard training. Intensity 3 or 4 days out of the week, doing very high intensity, whether it's speed work, tempo runs, high intensity gym workouts. And it beat me up, for lack of better words.
A lot of the same movements too.
Yeah, it is. Which I have gotten very good at wall balls, but I don't think I've done a wall ball since Vegas. I'm sure I have not. So yeah, the same stuff, just the hard training. I'm just looking forward to a change, a shift in my training.
So where are you going to?
Endurance.
Oh, Lord.
So, I know.
Long, are we talking ultras?
I thought you just said the other training was too hard on your body. Now you want to do ultras.
Yep. I just always been intrigued by the ultra world. Have things on my bucket list that I want to knock off. Up to 100-mile thing being on there. And I think there's no better time than now. I'm kind of wanting to take a break from the high intensity. So why not just chase some ultras while I'm kind of in this off-season phase? So ultra, potentially some Spartan ultras. It's a lot of travel. So depending on travel and if I can make any of them. I also have background of triathlons, so I'd like to get into more off-road triathlons.
Those are cool. Off-road
mountain biking and trail running.
Yeah. So, that's okay. You can do that. That's cool. I'm done with that.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So just doing more longer endurance, not beating myself up with these high intensity workouts right now. Mm-hmm. So I think I've done one high intensity workout since Vegas, and it beat me up. I did pretty bad in it.
But that said, you are sitting fifth for DecaStrong.
And DecaMile.
And is it fifth for DecaMile as well?
Yes.
Consistency is key. So
it was fourth until Alondra Greenlee. Did it this past weekend.
Yeah, she just set a record for that.
Destroyed
sub 20.
yeah,
first sub 20.
First sub 20.
Is a machine.
And she's a surgeon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like. So I have a theory. Clearly, okay. She has surgically enhanced her ankles. So she's got the carbon fiber plating thing inside of her ankles.
There you go. I'm so sure that's what she did.
And it won't even be picked up on x-rays because it's carbon fiber and not steel. That's the trick. So clearly an unfair advantage. But yeah, so you're sitting fifth in both of those. So does that mean, are you going to head to Atlantic City? Or are you going to just let that roll away? What are you going to do?
Because
we're going to be Atlantic City and we'd be like waving flags and you won't be there.
I know. It might be another last minute decision like Vegas. Like I said, not really training that right now. So
I'm pretty sure we can pressure you.
See where I'm at when that time kind of rolls around.
Riley has began the pressure. She's on it now.
I know. Are you going?
Yeah, we're all going to be there.
Bethany?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Oh, man, y'all, don't make me feel bad.
Bethany's headed to Chicago to win some races in Chicago first.
I have looked at Chicago, and I actually looked at flights again this past weekend, and it's just expensive, especially since I'm not really training it right now. It would just be like a trip for fun to go do it, and that would be like $1,000 trip.
How much are the flights? So you'd fly out of Atlanta, I assume, right?
Yes.
So how much is a flight from Atlanta to Chicago?
Round trip would have been about $500 or $600.
Okay. And it's crazy because I was just asked about going to Nova Scotia soon. And so it's an hour long flight. It's not a long flight. Mm-hmm. And it was like $800 round trip. It's like for an hour flight.
Wow. But see, now I'm looking at doing Ruck Fest in New Jersey on August 20th, my birthday. And those, I can get a round trip from Atlanta to Newark for $178 right now.
Wow.
Round trip. So I'm on the fence about booking that one. I've got to decide. I've got to go actually run with a ruck to see if I know how to ruck. Then I'll determine that one.
You have a ruck and everything?
I've just borrowed one. Somebody gave it to me at Barbarian.
Because those are not cheap, those things. Those are expensive. I couldn't believe it when I looked it up. We have gone to DIY, right? Which I do with many things. So when I did the brakes on my van, I took the old brake rotors off, and we have now wrapped them in tape with a little bit of cardboard to soften them up. So we have 15-pound and 23-pound ruck plates.
Somebody gave me 2 10-pound plates, and then I was looking at the Ruck Fest website, and it said recommend using 1 20-pound plate. So I don't know. I guess I need to email them because I'm not buying a 20-pound plate.
Tape them together.
Because you have to bring your own. So I'm sure that 2 10-pound plates will work, but I first need to put it on my back and learn how to run with a ruck. Before I go do like a 10-mile ruck run.
So that one there though, is it going to be like a ruck games thing where not where they're, I don't imagine they'll be wrestling and grappling, but where there'll be like some other events other than just like a long ruck and stuff?
It is. So there's three, it's an all day event Saturday, very similar to the ruck games. A long ruck in the morning, which they said would be 10 to 12K, I think. And then they will have some competitions Saturday afternoon. Not sure what those are, probably similar to Go Ruck Games. And then Saturday night, the top 8 males and females will face off for the podium spots.
So I really shouldn't have made that assumption that there won't be grappling because they're very...
There might be.
I guess now...
Expect it, but
I guess now you kind of have to, right? Like now they, you know, Pandora's box is open and you you can't go in there saying, well, I didn't think we'd do this because they've done it before now.
Right. Well, I've never done that, so it would be interesting.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you're fairly strong. I think you might be okay.
I'm probably bigger than most of the girls. I might have an advantage.
I'm sorry, Beth, but I'm going to take her in the wrestling match over you.
But you, Heather, you'd take Heather.
Yeah.
But why?
I'm just into the math, that's all.
But it really is, speaking of strong, it really is funny that, you know, I might look strong, but I've just started doing the strength block. Which I've never really done heavy weights like squats and deadlifts. And I'm seeing these smaller girls from High Rocks, Tara Jackson, calling her out, doing reps of like 10 with like my max squat.
But it's like anything though, right? It becomes skill and technique, right?
Yeah.
You gotta get that technique down. And when you get that down, you have the power. Like I've found a lot of guys that I'll run into with the same thing, they can lift way heavier barbells than me, way more weight. But when it comes to that, sometimes that just that brute force, it's a different kind of thing. It's, you know,
right.
And it's just weightlifting, especially with the barbell, is so much technique and skill that if you don't practice it, it just eludes you. It's not there. And it really, what really helps to have someone coach you in it and help your form and everything. And then, I mean, we've talked about some mobility.
Definitely mobility, which I lack.
That stuff is huge.
I've been working on mobility. That's one thing that I've also added in. I probably still don't do it as much as I should, but I've definitely added that in to work on my like squat depth mainly, and just form. So I used to have really bad back pain, and I can definitely tell with mobility that that's gotten a lot better.
I actually talked about this a little bit with Matt, and we went to a CrossFit competition recently in town just to watch. Mm-hmm. And I started noticing that when it comes to mobility and squat depth and stuff, that sometimes if you follow the rules to standard exactly, that really great ankle mobility is almost a detriment. Because I saw some women with just amazing mobility. I mean, they were getting squats so low to the ground, it was unreal. And yet at the same time, if I was to follow the standard, I would call a no rep.
Really?
Because the crook of their hips was still not going below their knee. It's just their knee could go so far in front of their ankles because they had such great range of motion there that they would look so low to the ground when at the same time not bringing their butt below their knee. And it
that
was crazy.
So uncommon though.
It does, but I bet you it's more common than you think if you start looking around. It just, it's an illusion. It looks so much like, oh my God, they're so deep in their squat. So you don't actually think, because they're like inches off the ground, you know? So you're not ever thinking there's no way that could be no rep. But then if you stop it, stop a video, pause it, and look at the elevation of their hips compared to their knees, it's just that their knees are so far forward. It's crazy. It was really weird. It was something I never thought of before until I saw it there. And I was just like, that happens more than you think, I believe, you know?
Probably. And it's really hard, especially when you're fatigued, to tell how you're going. Video yourself, which I've done to try to work on my form. It's really hard to tell if you are getting, you know, parallel in the spot depth. That also, you know, is clear in the high rock squat balls.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
it also made me think too that the problem really is then that the standards are kind of dumb. There's got to be a better standard. Because if someone who's getting that low is not hitting the standard, something's wrong. But
right.
yeah. And I still think with high rocks, I know it sounds crazy, but I still think Tara's right with the bump stop. As corny as it is, I think she's right.
I'm against the bucket, but I see your point, but I just think that you should be able to do it. I mean, they don't have a bucket in CrossFit games.
Yeah, but they're just not going to call the no reps because they don't have the judging. If they had the judging, that would be different.
Well, get the judging.
Judges competent. I shouldn't say competent, confident enough to call the no reps, right? And CrossFit's going with it now too. That's been big lately, is the big controversies about no reps everywhere. And judge is not calling it. It's hard to do. The judging is so difficult to do. So they need to pick movements that require as little judging as possible. And I think that's what the next step is, to try to make the judges as less important as possible. So they're just counting and that's it.
Right. I don't see high rocks getting rid of wall balls though.
No. They're not going to change anything. They're going to keep going the way they are. But maybe they put in the bump stop. I don't know.
So when will you get to a high rocks?
Who hell knows? Give it up. No.
Chicago. They're coming back to Chicago, right?
Yeah. I would say in the winter sometime would probably be best, because the schedule right now is so busy from here.
Probably January 2023.
Yeah, probably. Is that that one's at Chicago?
Yeah.
That sounds like a good strong possibility. Because I think my registration is supposed to transfer to the one in Boston in the fall or wherever the next Boston one is. But
I think there's a Chicago in November.
Yeah, November's no good. November's it's slammed. Like it's pretty much December, January. Those are the good months for it. Maybe February.
Yeah.
Which is shit time to travel just because of the weather. But you know, this schedule wise, that's
everything. At least it's an indoor event.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't mind, like, but you know, I drive everywhere, so that could make a more difficult drive.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've been making modifications to the van now, so we're even more prepared. Awesome. All right. Well, you got anything else for Heather, Beth?
No, thanks so much, Heather. It's so great to finally meet you-ish, sort of. But yeah, and congrats on your recent win. And we look forward to maybe seeing you in Chicago at DECA. But otherwise, good luck with your future endurance races.
Thank you. And good luck in Chicago.
Thanks. And
one more thing, because I don't remember if we forgot to say it or not, but we'll be getting you sent the Duonamic thing, which you already have.
I do. So
we'll get you some attachments for it.
Awesome.
So instead of just the system, you'll probably get rings or something along that lines.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.